Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Welcome to the MC Universe, where the Lorehounds, your guides to the multiverse and beyond. I'm David.
I'm Jean.
And I'm Alicia, and we're here to uncover the secret plots at play in our recap of Episode 3, Betrayed, of Marvel's Secret Invasion on Disney+.
We'll walk you through the whole episode, pointing out things you may have missed and throwing out theories about what it all means.
And stay tuned until the end of the show for Comics Corner, where Jean is going to get into the comic book comparisons.
Have the first 3 episodes been what you were hoping for? We'd love to hear what you're thinking. Email your Secret Invasion feedback and theories to mcu@thelorehounds.com or head over to our website at thelorehounds.com and use the contact form. Or record us a voicemail and we can include it in the next episode.
For ad-free versions of this and all of our podcasts, check us out at patreon.com/thelorehounds. We are coming up on our 1-year anniversary and we're going to be sending every patron, everyone who's subscribed at the end of July, a cool sticker that has our logo on it as a thank you gift for all of the support you guys have shown us. So stay tuned to the end of the podcast and I'll have a few more details about that as well as our programming schedule for the rest of July.
Finally, we'd be forever grateful if you could help us get more ears tuned in to the Lorehounds MC Universe. All you need to do is drop us a 5-star rating and review wherever you're listening. Apple Podcasts is especially helpful, even if it's just a few quick words. We read all the reviews and they mean a lot to us.
All right, Jean, we are halfway through the season. What did you make? Oh, wait a minute. Before I ask you that, I think we should probably do our generic spoiler warning.
Yes.
Yes. So we're going to be spoiling all first 3 episodes of the series. Everything in the MCU and associated comics is up for grabs. Is that a fair call, you guys?
Very fair.
Okay. Yes, let's play it safe. Everything's right, yeah. On the table.
That's right. Just be careful. So anyway, Jean, what did you make of this third installment of Secret Invasion?
I had a tough time with it.
Yeah.
I had a tough time with the story. There are things that we'll get into that I didn't particularly like.
Okay.
And there's one huge missing piece that I think is bothering me the most, then we'll talk about that in the comics corner. So, you know, stick around for that.
Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, I'm torn between this idea that Nick is such a really smart person and a really good tactician.
Uh-huh.
And he's not shown that at all in this series, in the first 3 episodes. And the reason why I say that is not because of who he's dealing with, it's because who he's not dealing with.
Okay.
He has too many, there are too many people on the sidelines, I feel, that there's no way that given the gravity of the situation that he wouldn't bring in. It just seems improbable to me that he wouldn't have reached out to other characters within the MCU that he knows well could help with this entire situation. Mm-hmm. So it's clouding a little bit of how I'm viewing the show, because I really understand what they're doing. This is a Nick Fury driven, and I love it that it's Nick Fury driven because I wanted to see him back on screen, but I'm still struggling with the fact that he hasn't reached out to other principals in the MCU in order to help with this situation, which is something I feel like he would do.
Okay. Yeah, I notice this is a problem a lot of comic book readers especially are having, just because in the comics it's such, you know, it's such an epic globe spanning story. And then this one is obviously a much smaller production. So I wonder if that's something that, yeah, I mean, David, you're not a comics reader. Are you feeling that same frustration?
Am I feeling the frustration of...
That it should be bigger, that he should be reaching out to more...
Well, I think this gets in... That touches on a thing that I've always had about the MCU properties at large, movies and television shows, outside of comics. And I understand the way of it working in comics, but in TV and movie, with a unified universe, it's a little bit confusing to me. There's so much damn stuff happening on the Earth and to the Earth and with humans. And we have Eternals and we have mutants and we have, you know, space gods flying through. And everybody else on the Earth is just sort of do-do-do or, you know, going about our daily lives. And this is like catastrophic existentially, you know.
But if it happens all the time, then, you know, you just
all
kind of
the
become,
time.
You become complacent.
Yeah, well, there you go. And it gets a little confusing to me about how, you know, and I get it in the comic book world, and you can do a lot of different things with the comics. And I think that layering of deeper level stuff is fine. It's just a lot. So that said, coming back around to your point is, I guess the way I would view it is there's two things. One, as a show, what can we afford? How much budget have we applied to this production? Can we bring in other actors or characters or other special effects? Okay, so like setting that aside, that part aside,
mm-hmm.
I can buy the story a little bit, in that there's something very personal going on for Nick Fury here, and we're definitely getting into his world. And I guess this goes into my summation of the story is that so far this season, the show is operating on two levels for me. One, there's the surface production level, which hasn't been great, but it isn't terrible relative to other shows.
I think the style is good for me. Mm-hmm. I like the style.
Right. I think I was expecting a lot. So maybe I think one of our Discord users, Rant Almore, said, you know, I don't see how that poor detail is any more egregious than most TV. And I think they're right. Mm. I think that there's a lot of television shows. Sorry, Jean, I'm totally taking yours.
No.
Alicia got me.
We're getting into it.
Yeah, got me started.
Yeah, let's go.
If you watch some shows on CW or on the Sci-Fi Network, I mean, if you know, Farscape or The Arrow or, you know, any of these kinds of things, what was another one? Sleepy Hollow, I remember, you know, I'm just trying to think of mid-level average shows that get decent viewership, get a few runs of a season, have a few nice names attached to it. This show, Secret Invasion, I don't think is any worse or any better than any of those.
It just gets more attention.
Yeah, and I was expecting more. Yeah, a lot more attention, and I think I was expecting it more. So maybe if I let go a little bit, it's fine. That's on the production level. On the deeper plot level stuff, I'm really intrigued. Is Nick Fury all that in a bag of chips?
Mm-hmm.
Good question. What motivates Nick Fury? You know, why is he... How did he marry a Skrull, right? You know, and fall in love and interspecies and personal stuff. Where has he been? What is this saber thing? You know, world geopolitics, you know, what does it mean to be a spy? What does it mean to be a freedom fighter? What does it mean to advocate for your cause? What does it mean to rally your people around a cause? All of these things are deeply fascinating to me.
Right.
Are they executing those ideas?
Yeah. I think I have the same thing that there's, I'll get into it more in a minute after Jean finishes his thoughts, but I think, I mean, hey, it's open discussion panel time. I think that there's, you touched on something that I'm feeling, that there's between intention and articulation,
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
And to be clear, I'm not expecting, like Thor, to come flying and, down in a bolt of lightning like he did in, Avengers or anything like that. That's not, that's not what I'm talking about.
No, but this is a story you expect more. They chose to call it this name. Yeah.
That is right. Exactly. And there are characters within the MCU that are really super smart. They may not have superpowers.
Like, what about Darcy here? Yeah.
Exactly. So, where are those characters?
Yeah.
How are they not involved in trying to stop a Skrull invasion?
Right.
And I understand that this is a Nick Fury-driven story, to your point, David.
Right, which is what I was going to bring again, because it's personal for him. And he says that in one of the trailers.
Yes.
And I appreciate that, yeah.
And I do appreciate it. And I think it's a story that about Nick Fury that's being really well told.
Because he fucked up.
I enjoy it. I'm really, into
promises.
His story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm into it. I'm invested in it. I want to see how it plays out. And like you said, his motivations and promises, all of that stuff, right? That was a song, promises. But... I really feel like even this being so personal to him, that it just feels off that he wouldn't use every resource available to him in order to combat what's going on. Even if he lied and had, half truth being told to certain people in order for him to get certain outcomes, it just doesn't feel... Yeah, it just feels off to me that he's going solo to this extent.
Okay.
So that's
even to just call up somebody and say, "I'm calling in a favor, sworn to secrecy.
Yeah.
I need extra eyes on the backside of this. Can you, cover my six, whatever?"
Someone who's not in the spy game,
right?
You know what I mean? Someone who's not, a counterpart in MI6 or the Russian intelligence services or wherever, someone who is outside of that. I just feel like he's savvy enough to have called in a marker.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he hasn't.
Unless there's a reason.
Right.
Unless it's a feature, not a bug.
Exactly. So he hasn't so far, but that's bugging me.
Yeah. Fair.
It's bugging me up to this point. So hopefully there's a big reveal at the end some point. But yeah, that was really what stuck out to me. The other thing that stuck out to me is like, why Gaia? I didn't see the utility, the purpose in that. I really didn't see the purpose in her being off.
They're this is a pretty bloody show. They're taking people out.
They're taking, but who are they taking out?
Right.
They've taken out Soren.
Yeah.
They've taken Maria. Out Maria.
Gaia.
And now they're taking out Gaia.
I mean, watch out, Vara/Priscilla.
Vara.
Because Nick's Sonya. down one motivating female.
Right. Yeah. So what's the story here that's being told?
But it's also my issue is not just with who's dying or, I still think, I'm pretty sure that Gaia is a fake out death because we have every reason from the trailers to believe that. I'm still in team. Maria's not really dead or some version of Maria's alive. So, okay. Fake out deaths are still annoying. And why is it female characters? But beyond that, why are there so many other little things in the writing that just rub me the wrong way as a woman watching this show. Like, just as one small example, you know, in this episode, we get Talos going into Bob's house, pretending to be Bob. And he's like, oh, just escaping the old ball and chain. And, you know,
right,
which is the most cliche way to put it also.
Right.
And then, you know, one of the guards is like, oh, I feel that, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
It's all these little comments like that. And like the fact that all of the women, except for arguably Sonya, all of the other women have mostly been plot devices rather than fully fleshed out characters, you know,
right.
Like
right.
Their job is to make X and B happen rather than us really understanding their motivations. Even, you know, especially Gaia, who on the surface seems the most interesting, but they're not showing us inside yet. So that's.
And Emilia Clarke,
mm-hmm.
You have Emilia Clark, what are you doing with her to, you know, to fridge her that way? If I'm using the fridge,
yeah.
You know, comment.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, you,
okay.
Are, you are.
You are.
If she stays dead, yeah.
Yeah, right. If she stays dead, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and the weird thing is, so I had to look into the writing for this, and I noticed that this is the only episode so far with a female writer on it, and it's someone that I
really?
Like, Roxanne Paredes, who, you know, has first worked with Kyle Bradstreet, who's the showrunner, who is the guy who did Mr. Robot, and he helped write the first episode, which was my favorite in terms of writing.
Right.
But this one, I don't know. Like, I noticed that the person who's writing every episode is Brian Tucker, and I don't want to say anything about another writer, but I just realizing that I don't think I enjoy his dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And I especially don't enjoy the thinness of his female character. So I'm wondering where Roxanne was in this episode in her writing. I think I have some ideas that we'll talk about as we go through. But yeah, I don't know. I really like to like things. Some annoyances are adding up with this thing, and they came to a head in this episode. I was mad when I finished the episode. Now I'm just a little bit annoyed, but still intrigued and totally signed up for the rest of this. And
right.
I have a feeling going through this, I'm going to be feeling better about this episode even by the end.
Two comments. One about the writing thing. We also don't know what the writing process is here. And this is part of the IP world of MCU. So who knows what studio notes were being delivered on the rough cuts and what was happening in rewrites and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, so Roxanne could have done a great job, and then they could have come around and issued pages on the day of the shoot or something, right?
Yeah.
We don't know.
Right.
Yeah, we don't know.
And that's part of the danger. I mean, studios need, and good studio heads. I think Casey Bloys is a good example at HBO, where they really let shows and showrunners have their own space. But an MCU thing or a Star Wars thing, it feels often the, you know, you can sort of feel the hands or the fingers of the property owners and the studio corporate heads. You can sometimes feel things getting pushed or pulled in different ways. And who knows what's happening on that.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to
and
say too.
We know that there are the rewrites with the Russian invasion stuff. So.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. Fair enough. The other point I was going to make to you, Alicia, too, which is, and to everybody, for all of us, as human beings, we don't complain about things that we don't care about. So if we're complaining, it means we care about this thing. So
right.
We care
right.
about these characters. Right. We care about these stories.
Right.
So we're not just throwing mud to throw mud, but it's because we want this story to be successful. And
yeah.
I think that it breaks our hearts a little bit when things don't as you said, Alicia, articulation to execution.
Yeah. Yeah. And anyone who knows me at all knows that I love Marvel passionately since I was a small child. And
right.
I'm definitely not one of those like, oh, I'm getting sick of Marvel people. Like, no, I am signed up for every project. I'm in it till the end. I just, they're all my babies and I want them to be their best selves.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Then, you know, the submarine story.
Like,
I had a small rant on the Discord about this.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
The entirety of that plot was so nonsensical to me.
Mm.
Because there is no reason for that to have been the impetus in Gravik's mind to start World War III.
Mm-hmm.
There, he could have done so many different things.
Sure.
And in so many different ways, things that are so less complicated than replacing people on a nuclear submarine.
And so much easier to film, right? Because that really looked like some 1960s era, you know, hey, let's jam a bunch of control machines into a room.
I do think that was the point, is to look 1960s era.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the point of the overall production design.
All right.
Because it's like that spy thriller throwback with aliens.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right. So, but it just didn't make sense that, to me, this guy who's been on the planet Earth for, I don't know, 40 years, 35 years, who has lost his own family in a war, who's now the Supreme Commander General of all the Skrulls, would choose such a complicated way to achieve his goal.
Right.
Like, that makes no sense. The entire, it's just too much work. It's just too much work for people who can, for creatures who can shapeshift and become anything that they see, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was just too much planning, too much work to do. If you want to fire some nuclear missiles, you don't got to go through all of that in order to get it to pop off. And that was really, to me, that I just kept watching the story. I'm just like, why? Like why? Why not just infiltrate a base?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you need to have, oh, we shot down a plane, so another country will react to the plane being shot down, and now we're going to have a full-scale war. Why would you need to do that?
And it was UN-1. It wasn't even like a leader from one of the other countries. It was, a British sub shooting down a UN plane?
Yeah.
Which doesn't make sense, because then it does make sense that, like, later when Talos says, I'll just tell them it's the bad Skrulls doing this. If stuff like that happens, then you'd be like, yeah, I don't know, because I can't think of any other explanation than shape-shifting aliens.
Right. Like, it baffled me. I sat there and I watched it, and I kept saying, why is he doing this? Like,
yeah.
Why not? You could probably impersonate the president.
Right.
I mean, of any country. You've already got the UK prime minister.
Right.
Right? What provocation does she need in order to launch a nuclear attack?
Yeah.
She can make up anything that she wants. We've seen leaders do that all the time. He's seen leaders do that all the time.
Sure.
He's been on Earth.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right? He has opinions about Earth and humans.
Right.
So
why go through this rigmarole of, you know, hijacking a nuclear sub where you have to have, you know, everybody in line.
Right.
And they didn't even hijack. They didn't even take over the captain. The most important person. The most important person on the sub.
Right.
That's who you should have.
Right. The missile officer, whatever. You just take the three people who need to authorize the launch or whatever. Yeah.
You got to the other two, but couldn't get to the most important one. Come on.
Right. Right.
Come on.
All right. What else do you got in your bag here?
Sonya, man.
Uh-huh.
Not enough Sonya. Yeah, she's the best part.
I love everything that she
she's up to.
Olivia Coleman is really,
yeah.
She's a joy. She's a pleasure to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't, you know, like you guys, I don't know, Alicia, if you've watched The Crown.
I know
David has.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't.
Yes, we talked about it a bit on here. Yeah.
So I episode. Haven't, you know, I've seen her in limited things. But she's just amazing to in this role.
This show has some serious star weight to it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I was so happy when, you know, theories came true that she knew that he placed, a listening device on the owl.
Right.
That just made my whole night when I watched it. I was like, yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
For putting my faith and recognizing that this person would absolutely know that Nick Fury bugged her. You know what I mean? So that was really cool to watch her explain that, I know that you did it, so it is what it is. and put an eye patch on. What's up with Vera?
Right.
Like, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
She gets a call. All right, cool. It's all cloak and dagger stuff. All
right. Right, which is what we're here for.
Right, we're here for that. Yeah. We're here for that. Goes to the bank. All right, cool. All right. What's going on here? I'm like, okay, what's going on here? This got a safe deposit. What she got in here? You know? Opens up the box.
And it's just.
And it's a.
Regular old, nothing special.
Just a gun, yeah.
You want a gun? I got a gun. I'll get you a gun. I'll go down in the corner and get you a gun.
Maybe it's got special scroll killing bullets.
Yeah.
Any old bullet can kill a scroll.
I know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, so what is the significance of this action?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm more annoyed or if I'm just more interested in finding out what was so important about this whole scene.
I think they're toying with us with the Vara Fury thing, but when we go through the episode breakdown, I'll talk a bit more about why I think that. Cool,
because I need some explanations as to why we went through this entire, you know, 5 minutes of, you know, phone call, cloak and dagger, get dressed, grab my keys, go to the safe deposit box, open it up, and mm-hmm. it's just a gun. Like, it's just a gun. All right, so yeah, there are some more things that stuck out to me, but I'm sure we'll get into them when we do our scene-by-scene breakdown. But again, overall, I am intrigued, but I was really annoyed at this episode.
Okay.
You know, yeah. I was just annoyed at it.
But you're in. But we're into
No, I'm not out.
Yeah.
I'm not out. Even when I'm out, I'm in.
There it is. That was organic too. That was well played. Alicia, do you have anything else you want to toss in as a general meta comment?
No, but I have lots of thoughts along the way.
It sounds good. I think I said my piece as well. So Alicia, I think we're ready to run through the episode breakdown. And thank you again this week for doing the notes, especially since you're wrapping up, Wool Shift Dust. You just put out your final episode for the series, of the series itself, and you got some more stuff planned. You want to do a little quick shameless plug?
Yeah, we just put out the episode 10 breakdown a little bit ago, a few days before recording. And next up, I had an interview with Hugh Howey, the author of the books.
Good and, get, as they say.
Yeah. he's very generous at this time.
He seems like it. He seems like a cool guy.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, so we had a great chat, and we're going to split it into two parts. And you'll see the first half, you know, that follows this regular spoiler rules of the podcast, you know, is focusing on the first season, first half of the book Wool. That will pop up on the main Wool Shift Dust feed. And then the second half, which is going to go into full book spoilers, that's going to be on our new Patreon Silo book club.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, we just started a book club with Sam of Silo TV Fans fame, and we're going to be going through the books one at a time and then doing a rewatch of the entire series with like all the book spoiler stuff that I couldn't say on the main podcast.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
Sounds like a fun project. Where's the patreon.com/...
Woolshift Dust.
Nice. Easy. No hyphens, just all one word.
No hyphens, just one word. Yep.
Okay, we can throw a link in the show notes for that. So... if you're into the Wool Shift Dust thing, definitely check out that and give Alicia some love, because she is putting her heart into a lot of these projects. And so,
it's just really good. Listen.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Listen up.
Thank you.
Yeah. Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And we have also a bonus episode coming up where both of you will be there.
Yes.
And John and Luke. We're having a full crossover. Woo! Yeah.
Full house.
So we're just going to we're going to give some awards out for, you know, our favorite characters, saddest deaths, things like that.
Sounds like fun. Cool. All right. Well, let's get into the episode breakdown. But first, let's take a quick break.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
Okay, we're back. Alicia, why don't you run us through the episode breakdown?
All right. So we open the episode with the mission briefing. We've got Pagan, you know, the right-hand man of Gravik. He's briefing Beto, the, you know, new protege, and also another Skrull named Xerxu, but I just kept calling him Red Shirt as I was watching in my head. but I know Xerxu. Xerxu's a name from the comics, right, Sean?
Yes. I don't think we need to...
Yeah, I think it's just...
I agree. He's a red shirt.
Yeah. It's just a bone. And so Beto, he opens by asking, you know, he's a potential moral check of this group. I'm keeping my eye on him on that front. And he's asking, like, do you think it'll work bringing chaos? And, you know, he says he joined up because he didn't want to keep our people to keep running. And then Pagan responds, like me, it wasn't fear of the past, but faith in the future. And faith is built on risk. Now, I find it interesting that they brought up faith. It feels like another nod to the comics, doesn't it, Sean?
It does, because we spoke about it a little bit in the last episode that we did, is that the Skrulls are a very religious society. Mm. So they have this built-in belief system that we haven't been really privy to in either the movies or up to this point in the TV show. So, yeah it's really, when he said that, that struck me like, oh, okay. Okay, yeah. They're at least recognizing some of the religious overtones that Skrull society does have. And it plays that way, because Gravik is really like a messianic type of figure.
Right. I was going to say, it feels like worship of Gravik is the religion now.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
At least so we'll see where it goes. That faction. Yeah. Well, Gravik's sending the three of them to infiltrate the HNMB Clyde HM Royal Navy base in Scotland. And so he's handed them, each of them, a new identity. So Red Shirt becomes an EMS officer, Beto becomes a captain, and Pagan becomes a lieutenant commander, or if we're doing it British style, lieutenant commander. Sorry, I cannot do a British accent. their target is they want to send a bomb from a sub called Neptune to UN Flight 819 at 2200 or 10 p.m. on the dot. And that's the operation that Jean was saying. Why is it so complex? Maybe is it camp? Is that why it's so complex? What do you think, David?
I don't know. I have no answer.
No explanation.
I'm down for the impersonation. I'm down for high stakes bluffing. Oh, you've got to get through, you know, these, you know, various challenges to, you know, to get to a MacGuffin, but, you know, to get to the objective. I'm all for that. I did think about one thing, though, because didn't they, towards the end of the episode, show us a scene of all of the people lined up in those pods with the little electro zappers at their temples? Is that something that's what, coming back around to this scene, do these guys know stuff about these officers that they're impersonating, you know, with personal details and a greater sense of impersonation because they're tapped in somehow to these dudes that are, you know, yes, everyone who's being plugged in?
Yeah, I was wondering that. I was going to ask you about that, Jean, because it's looked like they just changed based on a photo, but you must think they must have taken them out of play. I don't know why they wouldn't show that to us, but that must be what happened, right?
Exactly. I think that they've been taken out of play. Again, they didn't show them to us, but like to David's point, is they really do have the memories of these people that they're impersonating.
Right.
So that's how I guess the son will get to the son of the commandant.
Do you inherit? Right. Do you get love with memories? Yeah,
exactly.
That's an interesting question. See, this is where the show is working at this other level. Actually an interesting concept here.
They inherit. They get all of these memories. They get the little. They don't get the little tics and traits that every individual has, though. You know, the little things that differentiate Jean from John and Alicia from Alicia. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know
Elijah Dushku, I don't know.
Exactly. So they don't get those little, you know, ticks down, but they get the general backstory history of the person once they're hooked up to the machine.
Okay. And then we cut to Pagan in his new lieutenant commander role, sitting, you know, as like the older white guy sitting at the controls for the Neptune. And we don't see the other two again this episode, but we saw they entered the base with Pagan. So presumably they'll be popping up next episode, especially given how things are left. Yeah. And then we see we saw last time, like the science ball, magic science ball, where they were putting the DNA samples in. Now we see a giant magic science ball. Yeah. Gravik greets the council, of course, without Shirley. I also miss Shirley this episode. Gravik says, "We no longer just change faces, we change powers." And then we see like the right. Dr. Dalton working on this DNA that's green and like pulsating with these squishy green bubbles. And he talks about like, we're doing this like all of us, but does he mean himself? Does he mean the council? Does he mean the warriors? Does he mean all scrolls? Like, who do you think he wants to give these powers to?
When he said all of us, I immediately thought everyone.
Okay.
Really?
And then after, you know, I calmed down a little bit. I was drinking some tea. And I thought about that. And I'm like, would he really give Super Skrull powers and abilities to every Skrull?
Yeah. That's a bit dangerous, right?
I think he's limited in his scope about who is about to get these powers. He may have been talking about the council, or he may have been talking about the people who are closest to him.
Right.
So I disavowed myself of the thought that he was speaking for every single Skrull. But then again, as I said that on this podcast right now, I just thought, what if he is talking about every Skrull? Because there is another Skrull colony.
Oh
right.
Good pick.
Mm-hmm.
That has an emperor who is supposedly, you know, these million Skrulls did not like how he was running
whatever
things. How he was running things. So what if he's going back to what the Skrulls are, which is an expansionist society?
Yeah.
So maybe he is talking about every Skrull because he's looking further out than just Earth.
Interesting. Right. Bigger designs than just being just to have a colony, but to actually have a stepping stone to rebuild their empire.
To rebuild their empire.
With himself at the head of it.
Absolutely.
Of course. Yeah.
Insert mustache twisting, twirling.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm glad they didn't drag out the Super Skrull reveal. We know.
Yes, agreed.
We know that he's already at least taken on Extremis because we see that later. And we know from the trailers that he's going to have the group power. So I guess.
Right. Oh, Extremis, right. That's the heat thing, right?
Yes.
Right. That healed his hand. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh, I know that.
So, yeah, I'm curious. That's my question right now for that part of the plot is like, okay, so Super Skrulls, we know on the table, this is going to be that kind of show. But what does that mean? Who gets to be Super Skrulls? Is it just him or is it going to be spread out? And then we take a step back in time again to New York in 1998. So this is 1 year after we saw the Operation Spy Skrulls begin and 27 years after the present in the MCU. I mean, before the present, sorry, in the MCU. And we see that young Nick Fury again, and we see young Vara or Priscilla. And they have like a really nice little flirty encounter in a coffee shop. Yeah, I was especially like almost got little butterflies with that hand moment, you know, where she hands him the envelope with the bloody fingerprints on it and like slides her hand over his and kind of squeezes. I'm like, okay, like
not being subtle.
No.
What's going on with the de-aging action here? We just saw, my spouse and I went and saw Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny this last week.
Okay.
Good, not great. Happy to have gone. Had a date night, you know, with a kid. The kid lit away at overnight camp. We said, hey, let's go out and do something. So, and I enjoyed it. And we had a nice time out. But they did a lot of de-aging of Harrison Ford. Mm-hmm. It seemed pretty good. Mm-hmm. This seems pretty good. is this some AI stuff? Is this just post-production using the standard software tools?
If it looks good, it is human.
There you go.
But it's also like we don't really even realize how often it's used. Like how they were talking about it on the podcast on The Ringer called The Town. He was talking about that one too. Yeah. He was talking about how it's commonplace now just for, you know, a leading actor in a role will just be casually de-aged without, you know, it's not a flashback or anything. They're just Tom Cruise trying to look better.
Right.
Vogue cover, right? Or, you know, it's sort of back to the beauty mag standard.
Like animated retouching, yeah.
Because they do look, because when they jump from this scene, this flashback to them then in present day in the kitchen, you can tell that, you know, it feels like time jumped.
Right.
Yeah. I have a question for the both of you. Do we think Vara's playing him?
Well,
I think, well, okay, I'm going to talk about, when we talk about Fury's Kitchen more, I'll talk about it. But I think
Fury's Kitchen, that's a good restaurant.
Yeah. I think no. I was very angry with him in the next scene.
I'm not saying that she doesn't love Fury, but what I am asking.
No, we're going to get into it in a second. Wrapping up with 1998 real quick first. Do you guys think this is when he started calling her Priscilla? Because he calls her Vara in this scene.
Oh, I didn't notice that. That's a good call. I mean, they had to show us at some point how they came together.
They always had chemistry even from the first episode we saw.
And it's, you know, from the spy novels that I've read, you know, that it's, you know, spy to spy romance are not out of the ordinary because you're cloistered in and you're forced close together under the circumstances of what you're doing, the clandestine nature of the work, the high wire act of it. There's a lot of emotional stuff there. So, I think that, you know, two spies connect in general is a normal thing within these stories. And then having these two with their own personal chemistry really brought them together. And that's the way I was reading their relationship.
Okay.
Obviously, you know, not to jump the gun, but yeah, there's some question marks about Vara.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but she's all in here. Maybe that's why she courted him in the first place here. Cause she's pushing, he's like, oh, there's rules against commander operative romances. Right. And she's like, our unit doesn't exist. I don't work for you, but that's actually not what I think, but I'm putting it on the table.
Okay. Fair enough.
And yeah, one other fun Easter egg from the scene is she talks about the intel is about Dracov, who is the terrible guy who made his daughter Taskmaster and is like the villain for Black Widow. So, what do I think about Vara when we get to the present time is that I think that it's really freaking rich of Nick Fury to run off into space for like no good reason that he's told her and then come back and start asking her to explain herself. Like, what the hell? I also think that they're playing with us and they're like not showing some of their interactions. So I do actually think she might be helping him throughout the episode and they're just not showing it to us yet.
Okay. So you may be setting us up for a twist as to her allegiances, actually. So what do we make of that line then that she says, I became myself?
I became me, the me I was before you. I think that that's the line that was written by Roxanne.
Right. That's a good line, right? That's a proper line.
But I think, it's super relatable because, you know, when you fall in love with someone, you tailor yourselves to the version of you are with them. And that's a process anyone goes through with with a death or a breakup or something is you have to rediscover like, who am I without this person? Right. So I thought that was a really powerful line. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's again, where the show is working and is interesting is it would Nick Fury, you know, be who he is without the support of the Skrulls, you know, be as good as he is without Vara, AKA Priscilla? And where the hell has he been and what has he been doing? For me, as a non-comic book person, it's still this ginormous open question. And I was thinking about this today, was how did if they've got a defensive space station up there somewhere, how did they miss a million Skrulls landing on Earth. What is this saber thing supposed to do if not protect the Earth? So I got questions.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I also have questions about why Fury is watching Stearns. And he's like so Stearns, by the way, if anyone who knows Happy Gilmore, he played Shooter McGavin, and he was totally giving me Shooter McGavin vibes in this.
Absolutely.
He's like gleefully like, looks like World War III out there. Better bring an umbrella. You know. So I have to agree with, I'm calling her Varsilla in my head. I figured, like, why is he watching this?
And it was fun to see it in all of the MCU-ness of everything, to see these two actors having this mundane conversation about real, you know, spousal mm-hmm. life stuff, and how the toll and the effect of living a super secret life, you know, and being an Avenger person, well, all these things. It has real impact on real people, regardless of whether she's, you know, regardless of their individual roles and positions, they are still two beings that are, you know, decided to get married and make promises to each other. More promises.
Yeah. More promises. And he promises while he's retired that he's going to use his downtime to take up revenge.
I thought that's one of my favorite lines right there.
Yeah. I was like, okay.
It's campy, but I love it.
I'll give it that.
Have we seen Charlaine Woodward in anything else? I don't recognize her as an actor, but I'm really enjoying her performances here.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah, apparently she's a playwright, and it seems like she's been more busy on the writing side of things.
Okay, well, she's delivering her lines and playing her role really well. So regardless of the plotting and the scripting, yeah. I'm enjoying her performance.
She's a 2-time Obie Award winner, as well as a Tony Award and Drama Desk nominee. So she's,
She's punching. She's got some weight.
Oh yeah.
And I think this is another one like Gaia where I'm like, this is a potentially interestingly complex character. Just don't waste her, you know. Yeah. Don't just use her to propel the plot. Like, give me that. Like, give me more of that line that I became me the me before I was you. Like, show me who that is.
That's
please.
Fire, right?
Yeah. She gets a call from, and we find out the end of the episode, it was probably Rhodey. And she's like very cryptically, I don't have that information on hand right now. And but then Nick like looks at her like WTF.
Yeah.
And she says nothing and gives him like a little peck and a smile and walks away. So they're leading us to believe that she's not telling him things, but certain things that happen later make me think that maybe she is. Mm.
Did you guys clock her flip phone?
It was beautiful. I love it.
It was so weird.
Was it a Samsung? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure. I don't know how many people are making the clamshell flip phone things anymore. Yeah,
I think it was a Samsung. My mom has that flip phone because she used to work for Samsung. It's coming back.
Yeah, I was surprised. You know, I was like, wait, I'm not used to seeing that motion of, because she picked it up with both hands and did this very deliberate opening thing. And I was like, whoa, that's weird.
But that means she's eligible to be a bad guy because she doesn't have, because Apple won't let bad guys use their
phones.
Is that
TV.
True?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Apparently. Yeah.
That is wild. Well, the Apple, if they want to flex, right?
Yeah. And then we switch to the scroll side of things. Well, the other scroll side of things, at least. And we get Gaia's wake-up call. And so Gravik, he comes into this like bunker and confronts her about that safe house bust. And her response, she wasn't even selling it to me, but her response is like, he was tortured. So Brogan just like made an educated guess about where the safe house was, and he was weaker than you thought. And then it just make herself look even more shady. She says, I'm a good liar.
Right. Why would you say that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're a Skrull.
Yeah.
All of y'all lie all the time when you're impersonating people, right? So we know that you need to be a good liar. So I don't know. I thought that was a weird throwaway line.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting. So then Gravik, you know, he has this series of expressions that cross over his face where he's sort of like processing her just flat out saying that. And then he's like, okay, tomorrow morning early, you're coming with me. And she looks a little scared because we know from the last episode, he's got an appointment with her dad. She doesn't. But then they don't even play it out, because in the beginning of the next scene, as soon as they're in the car, he's like, oh, by the way, we're going to see your dad.
Right.
So I don't know.
Can I just say one thing about this scene? Why is she sleeping on a gurney?
Yeah.
This goes back to my first episode, I can't divorce myself from it. They're living in what appears to be squalor.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't understand why.
Nuclear, yeah.
I'm struggling to understand why. You know,
because they can, I guess, so that we as viewers know they have it hard. We feel sorry for them. It'd be hard to.
I don't feel sorry for them.
It doesn't work if that's.
It's not
work.
Yeah, it's not working. It makes me feel. You know, I don't even know what it makes me feel because if I'm supposed to look at them and say, "Oh man, look at these poor squirrels. Look how they're living." It's a choice that's being made by the leaders to live in this way, right?
Right.
I understand maybe not wanting to draw attention to yourselves by, you know, building up a beautiful.
But you're drawing more attention to yourself by centering all of this bustling beehive activity in a place where people, you know, they're conceivable. There's local inhabitants somewhere nearby.
No, I mean, but if it's a nuclear fallout, then
right.
No. Then
oh, right. Oh, was right. That was wasn't that they established at. That originally?
Yeah,
right?
That's
that
where they're at.
To be radioactive.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So nobody's around.
So there's
right?
No there a are Chernobyl no humans around.
Place. Yeah.
Exactly. There are no humans around. So I'm just struggling to understand why, even if the outdoors,
why, I mean,
the
yeah.
outdoors, you know, from the outside it looks terrible.
Right. Why are they
why is
squalor
it inside? Still squalor like.
Right.
Yeah. Why can't the British Prime Minister send them proper beds?
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Or yeah. Or something, you know, familiar to what they had on their home world.
Mm.
Right? Why are they perpetuating what he hates about humanity? Right? This is part of what he hates about humanity, letting people suffer.
Right.
So why are
I mean Gravik is just like nothing but hypocritical 24/7 as far in my book.
24/7.
Yeah.
24/7. So when he woke her up, it's dark, it's dank. It's, you know, she's sleeping on a hospital.
A desk. I actually looked at the thing.
Yeah,
it is?
Yeah, yeah. I looked at it just
desk.
Now. It looks like a desk. Yeah,
she doesn't
like
even get a
big
bed.
Office desk.
Yeah. Like so. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. So, poorly rested Gaia and Gravik, they arrive on a plane, quote unquote, but actually Twitter user Matt J. Johnson told me that they filmed at least one Russian town in Leeds. So I think they filmed most of it in the UK, but yeah, understandable. Yeah. And then we see
right,
Gravik.
They go from sleeping on a desk to landing in a private jet. Anyway,
private jet.
Moving on.
Yeah,
moving
yeah.
on. Moving
no,
on.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, priorities, I guess. Or maybe he's got Gravik's got some sort of like monk mentality where, you know, you must suffer to embrace life, whatever.
Uh-huh.
but then, he lays out like the clearest test for, you know, that I've ever seen on a spy show, even like side-eyeing her like the whole time while he's talking on the phone about how this attack is going to go down with the Neptune and the plane and everything. Seems very clear that he's laying it out, but she just types it all into this burner phone that we later see her drop next to Talos.
Which is not a fancy flip phone.
No,
it's not.
No,
this
it's
is
not.
Just
it's
a
not.
Old, old thing. Yeah. old school. But I did want to, by the way, I did want to shout out the music, which stood out to me in this part. And it's overall, I have to say, the music has been quite good for me. And the composer is Chris Browers. So right. I looked him up and he's done a lot of work that I really like. So Chris Browers, that's a name I'm going to be paying attention to.
Cool. Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, and then we arrive at the museum, and we first zoom in on this oil painting called Statesmen of World War I by James Guthrie, which was painted between 1919 and 1930. And it was interesting to me that the way they zoom in on it, especially on Churchill's face, where, the oil makes his eyes look kind of extra lopsided and stuff. It reminded me a little bit of the AI opening.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, this is Scottish realism, apparently, is what it's called.
Okay.
And Gravik says about this painting, you know, he uses it as a prop to say, statesmen spend their time posing for pictures while warriors do all the work in wars and all the dying. And he's going to write his story in blood. And Talos says, yours and everyone else's. David, what did you think of this exchange?
Well, I like to see Kingsley Ben-Adir light up a little bit. He's been very, what's the word? He's contained.
Stoic.
Yeah, and he's trying to play these, you know, this very difficult sort of political leadership role. And to see him emotionally, you know, light a fire, it felt nice to see his range and to see him really giving us some opinions, which go back to our previous conversation in the last episode about what history, race politics, all of these kinds of things. So it was a fun bit, whatever. So I don't mean to simplify that stuff, but it was an enjoyable performance and to see him really, you know, push himself as an actor in this role. Right. So
that was my favorite graphic scene so far.
So far. Yeah.
He was a bit more animated. I agree.
A lot, a lot animated.
I think the next scene might have been the cafe scene might have been my favorite if it was spoiled by the trailer, you know, and it was so, right. I understand why they include it in the trailer because it's like a really cool thing. But then as soon as it started and they sat down in the cafe, I was like, oh man, I know exactly what's going to happen. Right, and I wish I didn't. Yeah. Right. But yeah, so Gravik, he uses a lot of sugar. Like this is the second time they've shown us his sugar addiction, which versus like, and they also made a point of showing us Nick Fury just takes his coffee black. Which is how I take it, by the way. But do you think they're trying to like show us something with this juxtaposition?
I thought it was it a scroll thing?
I mean,
we haven't seen anyone else do it.
Yeah. He's the only one that does it to this extent. And you asked the question, I hadn't thought about it, Alicia. I think, yeah.
Could it have something to do with his super scroll powers? Like he's burning more calories?
You know what? That could be.
We saw him do it though before. I mean, we don't know when he started to do the powers, but we saw him do it in a previous episode too with all the sugar. I think the first episode.
Yeah, I bet tea. It has to do with his heightened metabolism or something like that.
Yeah. So, okay.
I was just looking up Kingsley Benadir. He doesn't have a huge, he doesn't have a deep, deep filmography.
He's in a lot of stuff right now though. Like,
yes. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. It's like suddenly there's way more. And I really want to see him
more.
Give me more Kingsley Benadir.
Yeah.
Agree. I think he's playing Bob Marley.
He is. It's going to be out next year, it looks like.
Okay. And he's going to be in Barbie too.
Yes.
Oh, he's in Barbie?
He's one of the Kens. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I get like no sense of warmth in the history between Talos and Gravik, even though, I mean, you would think that Talos was, you know, must have some ways been like an uncle figure to him, considering he's been in this group with Talos since he was a child.
Yeah, I don't see any real connection between him and Talos. I think when we first met him, he'd lost his family. I think he's closer to Vara, who's the person who, you know, brought him to Earth,
right,
than anyone else. And then his connection is really to Nick Fury. I don't think he's lashing out at Talos, right? I think the father figure here is Nick Fury.
Okay.
The familiar figure, you know, is Nick Fury to me. Could be wrong, but
and Talos is like his best friend who's just also annoying then.
Yeah. Like Talos is somebody who's just in the way, whereas mm-hmm. Nick Fury is the person who I think he, you know, looked to for his own compass, you know, this is the guy who's gonna make it all right. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
And I don't think Talos was that set up for him based on what we saw in that first episode when he was introduced.
Yeah. And then we get we talked about that, you know, that hypocrisy of Gravik, and he's talking about all these miscreants know is murder, talking about humans, but he's the one who never stops talking about murdering people. And then he says before that, I guess, you should be grateful I haven't sent Gaia back to you in a body bag yet, which I would call foreshadowing if it weren't so heavy handed.
Yeah.
Which I was not expecting that to happen. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's true. I really thought she was like, I wasn't worried about the plane. I wasn't worried about her in the end. And then, well, now he says this line, humans are most formidable when threatened. This is what Talos says. What did you guys think of that line? Because I've seen a lot of people like it online, but I had a different reaction to it.
No.
No.
I think he's talking about things that are Thanos level. right? Graphic is talking about things that are like climate change. You know what I mean? Like climate change and drugs and crime and murder and all of these things that are the day-to-day existence of humanity that nobody cares about. That's what's threatening humanity. And right. They don't care enough to do anything about it. Where Talos is like, humans, you know, they band together when they're threatened. Yeah, when they're threatened by, you know, an alien invasion or things of that nature. So it's really, I think Graphic is more drilling down to the day-to-day existence of humanity and his disdain for why things happen the way that they happen. Like, we don't deserve this planet, right? Mm-hmm. Not because, you know, Galactus is coming. We don't deserve this planet because we're destroying it.
But the Skrulls are no better. Like, Gravik literally wants to start a nuclear war. Why does, I mean, yeah, again, hypocrisy city.
But I think the nuclear war is a means to rid the planet of the thing that makes the planet terrible. Nuclear war for him isn't a terrible idea. A radioactive wasteland, it kills everybody who he feels doesn't deserve.
I mean, and all the animals, which presumably they probably also need animal food, right? I don't know.
Maybe they have.
I don't know. You know, but I also just think like every group of animals is formidable when threatened, including Skrulls. So yeah, it just seems like there's a lot of attempts to say things are different between humans and Skrulls. But other than me seeing like the Skrull characters as being a lot testier, I don't really see the difference. But Talos wants them not only to see the difference between humans and Skrulls, but he wants humans to see the difference between Talos Skrulls and Graphic Skrulls. And he thinks if, you know, he tells the public it's the bad Skrulls making war, that, that you know, they're going to see the difference between the good side and the bad side. And I kind of have to agree with Graphic on this one, where he's like, you're going to be the one to kill us all because I'm an idealist. But they make Talos look kind of dumb.
Yeah. He seems very ineffectual in this scene.
Talos is kind of white.
I guess so.
That's what it is. Graphic is lived experience as a human is as a black man.
Okay.
We can't take that out of the equation.
Interesting.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Cannot.
Yeah.
Can't take it out of the equation.
Okay.
His lived experience on walking on the earth is that of a black man.
So, especially
from
from
what we know, right?
And when
right.
we've seen all other Skrulls, we don't see an actual representation of humanity's diversity in Skrull
very
representation.
Limited.
Very right. limited. And most
right.
of the time,
Beto, Vara,
mm-hmm.
Varric,
mm-hmm. Rhodey,
Shirley. the other man's name escapes me. On the council, I can't remember his name. He hasn't spoken to us yet.
Oh, the Asian guy, Jack Hyuk-bin, I think his character's name. Yeah.
So, you know, everything that Graphic said in that scene is like, yeah, it makes sense for him because he's walked this earth, you know, as a white guy. You know, what doors have been closed off to him in his human form?
Mm. We can read as to, at least the way I was reading it too, is that that's some of his motivation, or not his motivation, the intensity of his motivation.
Right, right. So, and then right. for him to say, I want them to see the good and the bad, to make the differentiate between the good and the good Skrulls and the bad Skrulls, man, that's a conversation that black folk have been having in the Western Hemisphere for generations, right? And Graphic is the one to realize, like, we're all just Skrulls.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When it comes down to it, humanity will see us all as just Skrulls.
Right. Right.
Right. Sadly, I agree with him on that point. So then Graphic, he says that Gaia's going to, he's like, okay, so Gaia stays with me. And we see the first of two times where Talos absolutely flips out as soon as anything is said about Gaia. Like, this is like a total trigger hair pressure point for him. Yep. And he knifes Gravik in the hand, chokes him, and we see all the bodyguards standing up and like not doing anything. So I guess they deemed it not a high enough threat level. He's like, keep your daughter's name out of my mouth. and then, yeah, Gravik pulls his hand out of the knife and we see it just heal with that red heat that is characteristically Extremis. So apparently he's already got that power. And
yeah.
Super Scroll Gravik.
Which makes sense given his position, right? He wants to be invulnerable as he's rolling out this plan. So knowing
I would
that
start with that one too.
Yeah, it's a smart one so that he can, it's hard to kill, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, as we leave, we get a little like espionage subterfuge where we see an older gentleman bump into Talos and we figure out in a minute it's Gaia in disguise. But the guy drops a phone and that's the phone that Gaia had entered the bomb intel on. And then we see that older man like squeeze around the back of the bus that Gravik gets caught behind.
I totally didn't understand this scene. I was so confused by it. Thank you. And now I understand what's going on.
And then we see Gaia, she just switches back and she's standing there as herself next to the car. And we can see behind her the guy she was pretending to be, but he's on the phone. So, you know. Right. Yeah. So that was her who dropped the phone. Yeah.
Got it.
That was well done. I like that.
Because the whole van stopping in front of him and all that, I was like, what's going on? I thought, did he get.
Yeah.
That's taken why or hit.
I rewound and played a few times. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So not great then from a production standpoint if it wasn't that apparent.
I picked it up.
I don't know.
Did you?
Yeah. Right. I picked it up in the scene. I picked it up. I'm like, oh, yeah.
I like she dropped the phone.
As soon as the phone dropped, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. That's the same phone? I got it. I picked it up.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even pick up on that. Yeah. I assumed that she handed it off to somebody else. But anyway, yeah. Okay. So I'm just being thick. That's on me.
I think a lot of people, might not have. And then we get the confrontation between Talos and Fury. And I guess this is their first confrontation since the train scene, which he refers to as yesterday. So I'm like, oh, it felt like more time, but okay, I guess it's only been a day since he kicked him off the train in the middle of Russia.
Right.
Balls to ask for a favor after what you said yesterday. Like, yeah, what about the kicking you off the train part?
Yeah, a lot happened. I mean, Fury has gone to see Priscilla Vara, where is she? And then, here. So there's a lot of jetpacking happening here.
Yeah. Yeah. And he refers to an English fry up as dog food, even though we saw him making basically the same thing like a few scenes before.
I'm hungry. I'm looking at the scene right now. What do you mean dog food? What is that? I was very upset about that comment. On behalf of all of our British and Commonwealth subjects who listeners who eat a good English breakfast, I defend you.
There we go.
But have you guys noticed there's a lot of dog references? Talos talking about the dog later, and we had Gravik talking about better to be a dog last episode. Yep. So I don't know. Maybe what's
the dogs will be saved.
Yeah, maybe the dogs will be saved. Maybe Brian Tucker is a big dog fan, the writer.
Right.
Fury, he says he has a lead on a rebel scroll high up in the U.S. government here in London. And this is where I'm thinking, like, lead from whom? And then, and who is the rebel scroll? So I'm thinking, like, is the scroll Rhodey? And he got this information from his wife off screen. Like they're just playing with us. Like they played with us last episode and made us think maybe he didn't know she was a Skrull. Maybe they're doing that again. Because otherwise, I don't know. Do you have any other ideas who's giving him leads and who the lead is about?
I don't. That this is one that completely I'm ignorant to. I don't think it's Rhodey.
Certainly not Rhodey.
Yeah, I don't think it's.
Why don't you think it's Rhodey?
Well, they had the big argument and he got fired and, so.
Yeah, but then maybe his wife told him, by the way, the guy who just called me on the phone is Rhodey.
Because he is working with some Skrulls. We know Rhodey is working with some Skrulls.
Right. Well, that's who we hear on the phone at the end of the episode.
Right. Yeah. Right. So. My initial reaction was not Rhodey. And I don't know who she's working for. Or who she's working with, I should say, not for.
But we know that she is now under her own motivations. She's not sublimated. She's not subsumed her motivations to
Fury.
But
we don't know that.
Right, but she we do, because she the point I'm making is that she said, I've now become the person I was before. So what are her initial motivations that existed prior to being co-opted as a spy for Nick Fury? That to me is the interesting question.
I hope that line carried some weight, but I think that my opinion at this point, and we'll see how it turns out, is that she's working on Fury's behalf during that final scene we see play out.
Right. Which that's the question is what are her motivations?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they left it purposely ambiguous. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And Fury, he's got everyone mad at him this episode, including me.
Well deserved.
And I love that Talos says to Fury, use your words, which is like, because we had earlier where he says to his wife, like, oh, just ask me if you want an apology. Like, why does she have to ask?
Right.
And now it's like Talos is like, you know, you're going to have to say something to me. And the next scene, Sonya's like, you know, you owe me an apology. And I don't care how many people you've already apologized to. I'm owed one.
Exactly.
I think that's interesting if we see like Fury go on a journey where he starts to realize more how his behavior affects other people. That's what I'm hoping for.
I don't know if Nick Fury will get to that point where he's saying to himself, like, oh, you know, I have to start treating people better. I think his whole raison d'être is to protect the earth, right? No matter what. No matter who gets hurt.
No apologies.
No quarter, no apologies. So I don't know if he'll get to the point where he's saying, you know, my actions here were so bad and I've hurt so many people in order to save the world. I don't think he'll get there. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, we see him at least give a little bit at this point, even though he backtracks on this point later in the episode. But he will say, because I'm useless without you, to Talos.
Right.
Even though he accuses him of causing poop for him to pick up. The word poop makes me laugh. I'm an adult. But yeah, so Sonya also wants an apology because he put the bug on Hoot's eye, and we get the most adorable little owl eye patch. I don't know why the owl needs an eye patch, if it's just to remind her of Fury, but I'm for it. I'm
glad that she's got a craft department in her office where she can just call down and says, okay, here's the dimensions of an eye patch.
That's so awesome.
What Sonya want today? What whim can we satisfy?
And who drinks wine at work? Sonya does. Apparently she's got a bottle and a glass out there. I was like, dang, I can't work and drink at the same time.
Listen, she's not having a rough day. She's having a rough day. She found out, like, not only have the Skrulls infiltrated this base, this Royal Navy base and the Neptune sub, but they've also, you know, she knows that someone gave up their location at the butcher shop last episode.
Right.
And we see her looking at the folder of this ginger bearded guy played by Tony Curran. And that's the same guy she was talking to on when we saw Nick Fury bug the conversation in the first episode.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
So I'm wondering, we'll probably see more of him in the last half of this, I'm assuming. But yeah, so he's likely the inside man at the butcher shop.
Okay.
And by the way, he was already in the MCU. He played Bor, Odin's father, in Thor: The Dark World. So he joins the ranks of actors who have played two roles in the MCU.
Got to get that. Got to get those contracts. Got to get on the gravy.
Not mad at it.
And this far too short scene with Sonya ends with her telling the name of the sub captain, Commodore Robert Fairbanks, aka, as he shall be known for the rest of the episode, Bob,
yes.
I have a friend named Bob who was listening to this, and the whole time was like, stop talking to me that way, Fury.
Funny. All right, well, let's take I think it's a good time to take a quick break. So let's do that. And then when we are back, we will finish up the episode and then get into the comics corner. And we're back. All right, so let's talk about Bob. All about Bob.
Yeah, we get that car conversation we referred to earlier first on the way there, where like Fury's talking about cleaning up Talos's poop, and Talos is like, actually, we are the Skrulls. We made you what you are.
Yeah.
We find out that there are 20 in the original spy network. So I have to give that to Nick, that like a million is a big jump up. Right.
And I thought this was interesting, deeper level of the show. This is interesting stuff. Is Nick Fury really all that? He's good, no doubt. Is he as good as we think he is? Good question. Not sure. And I like that they're poking holes in the edifice of Nick Fury.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do find he's like defensive, and it annoyed me, but it also seems really realistic. You know, all these people are coming at him, and he's just, you know, and demanding apologies and telling him what he's done wrong and how he's hurt them. And that's a lot for someone to take on. So I'm hoping this is like, you know, we have this defensive reaction, like during this speech, he's just like, yeah, we're here in front of Bob's house, but you're just wasting your mouth blabbering about friendship. And so I have to hope this is like, this is, yeah, a journey that's going to, we're going to see play out over the next three episodes, where Nick becomes more aware of the other people in his life.
Right.
But yeah, so we see Talos going inside, and it's working until his cover is blown by someone who just saw Bob. And then we find out, like, basically all this security are Skrulls, because Nick's just like firing and just killing left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a glimpse of Talos. He peeks in and he sees that teenage boy, Zachary, gaming, and then leaves him there. But part of me wondered if that was already like Bob pretending to be Talos, just checking on his son. Because the next thing we hear is Talos's voice on the radio saying Nick, and Fury's immediately like, Talos does not call me Nick, and he enters the room gun first, and the Bob confrontation begins.
So are you saying that there, so walk me through that a little bit more.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's just a thought, like, to just, we know at some point that Bob was in, either Talos called him Nick to alert him, or Bob was imitating Talos. Was it just the voice, or was he pretending to be him altogether? I don't know. I think, yeah, there's just, there's an extra layer here that plays into what happens with Gaia later also, where, you know, Skrulls can also pretend to be other Skrulls. So at what point might we find out that's been going on?
And for Talos to get got, right? What did he do to, how did that screw up?
Yeah, exactly. Presumably he had the advantage of surprise, except for the knocking out all the guards. That's probably noticeable.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, and then Nick, like, or maybe it's to differentiate between, you know, Talos leaves the teen alone, and Nick comes in with him at gunpoint, like threatening him. And it, I personally found he took the teen threatening a little bit too far. Like, it really felt like he might hurt the kid. I don't know. Do you think, John? Do you think he would have done it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think it. Nick Fury bluffs.
Yeah, he would have done it. He would have done it. That's the whole thing with Fury, whatever he has to do, right? Whatever he has to do, whoever he has to use.
Right.
I mean, yeah, whatever. I don't like it, but it does work.
Right.
Because, yeah, apparently this Skrull loves his presumably human, you know, son, this real son of the man he's copying. So that, yeah, is that, and that's where we were talking about that idea of like, is love wrapped up in memories? What is love? What is love?
There you go.
Anyway, that one's definitely a song. And then, yeah, the last time we see the kid is like, he's tied up, and like Talos is leaning against him and says like, here's a sip of water to calm your nerves. And I had to laugh. I was like, is there vodka in that water? Like, why?
I know, right? Like, what's in the water? Come
on. And then we don't know at the end of the episode what happened to the kid. Like, is he still tied up in the kitchen? Did he get a debrief, or is he just traumatized for life now? Like,
yeah. Right.
Yeah. That's it.
I think it's the last part. He's traumatized for life.
Yeah.
Well, presumably this Bob is among those that are being held by the Skrulls, right?
We see him later. Yeah.
We see him. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Good. I'm glad I wasn't imagining that. So yeah, the kid is, yeah, it's going to mess up the kid for a while.
Yeah. And we get a nice game of good cop, bad cop with Talos and Nick Fury. And like, Fury is like, tell me what the code is, or I'll blow out your purple brains. Or Talos is more like, I'll protect you from Gravik. And Bob rightfully points out, like, dude, You can't even protect yourself. I just disarmed you literally 10 seconds ago. And we find out also that Gravik had offered Talos a partnership before he took over. Bob says, you created this vacuum. All Gravik did was fill it, which seems like very complacent, like excusing yourself line to me. But we find out later Talos chose Nick.
Yes. And that's the thing, right? I in choosing Nick Fury, did Talos, you know, turn his back on what his original mission was?
Right.
Right? He's running missions for Nick, but what's the original mission? What's your original goal? Is to find, you know, your people, a homeworld. And now there's a million of you here. Is that mission no longer viable?
Right.
Which is why Gravik is saying, well, since we're not going anywhere, we might as well take this whole shit over.
Well, yeah, Bob is the only one who knows the code word. He's not giving it up, even when Fury shoots him in the knee and says, enough of this bull, which I really felt him not cursing there. And like also the poop thing. And like when he says, like, truth is a mother dog.
Yeah, they're keeping it. You keep it at 13.
They are.
But it's like
are.
Almost.
Sorry.
Like, don't even apologies. Tease me, because it just makes me think about how you're making this man hold back. Yeah, so Talos, he takes the gun before Fury can kill another Skrull, but his face is like red and shaking with anger. And then, yeah, Bob insults Gaia and boom, game over. So maybe Talos really has changed what he said last episode.
Yeah, that's the first Skrull that we've seen him deal with in that way.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
He's bent over backwards not to kill other Skrulls up to this point.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's a thing to not do that, right? That Gravik had the one guy taken out. That seemed like a big momentous thing.
Right. Well, yeah. And then Gravik shoots another Skrull at the end of this episode, but.
right. But like we're Talos, crossing lines, yeah. Right? The right. Idea is that now it's really Skrull on Skrull in some ways.
Right.
Where, and now what lines have been crossed that then you can't come back from. Right. Wasn't that a, where was that? Oh, maybe that was a different show. I'm just thinking of that. That's a thematic element in some stories is what do you have to do and can you come back from that?
Right.
Right. And this, you know, pokes holes into Gravik's whole reasoning of why humans don't deserve the Earth.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Compare and contrast here.
Right.
Yeah. So then we also, during this time, this is intercut with this scene of like the submarine command control, and we have the lieutenant commander being questioned by human captain about the target, but ultimately, you know, he gets him to back down when he wants to contact CENTCOM, but eventually he's like, well, you know, you're questioning authority, I'll just kick you off, and he's going to go for it. He's going to do like the double turn until Gaia in the quest, we'll talk about in just a minute, liberates the passcode just in time. And we see Pagan try to still like push the command through, try to turn the key, and the captain stops him. So, and that captain has like a look on his face, like, what the fuck are you doing? So we have to assume Pagan is definitely has his cover blown and might be arrested or might be fighting his way out of this scene next time.
Right.
But he's on a sub. Where is he going to fight?
Wait, is he on a sub or is he controlling it from the base in Scotland?
I assume that this was supposed to be a submarine.
Yeah, I thought he was on the sub. Okay.
Yeah, this is on the sub, which is what I was complaining about from a production standpoint, because it doesn't look like a sub.
Well, maybe
it just looks like a
room. I thought that they were on that base, because we saw them go to that base in Scotland, and then suddenly he's in front of the control.
The sub was in the
Okay.
So, all right.
All right. So while all this is going on, you know, Talos, he's called Gaia and we get this like cold, what is it? She runs to find the passcode, disables some guard, definitely blowing her cover. So I'm like, why not shapeshift into a somebody else? But fine. And then we see in Skrull victim storage, we get the FXN anchor. We have the prime minister. We have the scientist lady and we have the real Bob. And she stops in front of the real Bob's like sort of desktop pensive like memory mirror thing.
That's right.
And see that he's
I kind of forgotten about that. That's how they got the code. Yeah. So that makes sense. Yes.
So he's thinking a lot about his son. And so she's like, the code word is Zachary, which works, which come on, that's like worse than
terrible
using your pet's
code.
Name.
Terrible code.
Can you clear?
easily fished. Yeah.
Jean, I know you I said before that you had questions about like how long she's been working with Talos, and I do too.
Yeah, like Is it a recent development?
Did it just happen in this episode, what we saw with the phone? Or
exactly. Yeah. So that I guess won't be answered. That question won't be answered. But I was just really, you know, wondering how long have, you know, father and daughter been on the same team?
Yeah, we see chaos start to go off around the scroll base. And so we see like a lady, or I don't recognize, who is in front of some computers alerting about unauthorized phone, comm breach, and goes running. So I'm wondering if they showed us that for a reason, if we're supposed to recognize that lady in future episodes or that room. Yeah, and meanwhile, Talos and Fury load up scroll corpses, including poor Bob.
Poor Bob.
Good night, Bob.
Yeah, good night, Bob. And then, yeah, the Gaia goes on her great escape. Motorcycle, no headlight, dead of night, guardhouse, suspiciously empty. And she's like, well, guess I better get going. And so we get a graphic with a, what you up to there, Gaia?
Mm.
And she's got another, this lie I think is a little faster in her feet than the one she gave in the not a bedroom earlier. And she's like, yeah, I heard about the failed strike. Men need extraction, which, good point. Like, are you going to extract those men or not?
Yeah. On a motorbike with no headlights in the dark.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Very. And yeah, Gravik says, didn't fail. The plane would have been valuable, but finding the traitor is even more valuable. So yeah. And then he's like, turn around. And she says, I like this part. She's like, you will look at me, and asks if he's the leader of Skrulls or our worst enemy. And pow, we see this woman in Skrull form, but we know we're going to see more Gaia on the show. So the question is, did she take some Super Skrull abilities? Is it someone posing as Gaia? What do you think, Sean?
There are a lot of rumors around that Gaia is gone, but Emilia Clarke is not. So
okay,
the question of whose face is Gaia wearing? Some people believe that Emilia Clarke is going to be playing the role of Abigail Brand in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if that's true or not, so I'm not saying this is happening, but that's one of the theories out there. And this is a way to bring that character into the MCU proper. She's you know, half alien, half human. She's a mutant. She's can speak virtually any language, alien language, you know, human language. She has, you know, fire powers, again, which aligns to some of the things that are going on in the show. She was a commander of the Peak Station, which could be, in the comics, could be Saber in the MCU. She worked for S.W.O.R.D., which is a sister organization to S.H.I.E.L.D. So there are a lot of interesting parallels to be made, but we'll see if that comes to fruition or not.
Okay. I mean, I hope that they didn't kill the character of Gaia, but I mean, I'm happy if Emilia Clarke's around still, but right. I still would call it a fridging if they killed Talos's daughter.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we get, speaking of the other woman in danger, we get Varsila in a room full of plants. So something going on with her and the plants, but they're definitely human plants, not Skrull plants. So I'm wondering if that's just...
Is it me, or I thought there was something about her backstory as being a botanist, scientist type person.
I mean, that's what it appears to be. So yeah. I guess, yeah.
And then we had the whole thing of Skrulls at the beginning, the first episode.
Yes.
Right.
With Beto saying, oh, like, where did you get this? Oh, we grow all Skrull stuff. So is she... Yeah.
Is she involved in that?
Is that her thing too? You know, when she says, oh, I'm back to who I was. Is that her passion? Is that her life? Is that, you know, what she's
about? I mean, apparently that was Soren's thing, Talos's wife. So yeah, maybe they worked on it together.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But she's surrounded by like earth plants. So yeah, that's, maybe she's learning from them. I don't know. And something interesting. But yeah, she gets a message, looks bummed about it, takes a key out of a jar. She goes to a train station, I guess, to go somewhere else, to another city.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, like, where's she going? But there's a man watching her, and she clocks him. So I don't know if that's just adding to paranoia or if that's going to turn out to be somebody in particular. And then, she has to go to, like, one of those places with the fancy lock boxes where you need a staff member with a second key to open it. And indeed, there's just like that freaking gun inside. And then the episode ends with a phone call. We hear Rhodey's voice say, St. James Church in 1 hour. No, you can't speak to Gravik. You're talking to me.
So, and is it Rhodey's voice? I mean, is it Rhodey or just Rhodey's voice?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah, good question.
Right.
Good question.
You would think, I mean, then that would mean that she would have only had contact with him over the phone, which is possible.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is deliberately obfuscating the truth, right? The whole show is trying to get us, keep us on our toes.
Right.
Yeah, so are you guys feeling any differently about the episode after breaking it down?
I think I'm the same. The the underlevels of the plot and the characters, interesting surface level plotting. What did you say, Alicia? What was it? Execution versus articulation.
The intention versus like the articulation.
Right. Yeah. I feel that I'm in the same place. There's really cool stuff going on and they're just fumbling it a little bit on it's a mid-rate show in all other senses of production. So there we go.
Yeah. I'm still, annoyed. I'm still annoyed.
Do you want to roll your annoyance straight into your comics corner?
Yeah. Let's do that. But first, okay. Alicia, how do you feel about it after we've gone through it?
I mean, I hear from a lot of people who did really enjoy it, and so I'm trying to look at it from their perspective and take that out of it. It comes down to, again, just what's going to happen next. If all these people dying without having their characters developed, if that's going to pay off, then okay, I'll reserve judgment until I see how this series ends. Right. But right now, I'm seeing some red flags that are making me just a little worried about how especially women on the show are handled, but just also some of like the superficiality of some of the dialogue, even though you can tell like the Kyle Bradstreet showrunner laying these deeper layers of you know, all of these things that have been so fun to break down with the factions within factions and, you know, who owes what to whom and all those things, the interpersonal stuff.
Right.
All right, Jean, so what do you got for us for Comics Corner?
This is another thing that's annoying me in both Secret Invasion comic stories, the humans, the Earthlings were able to figure out a way to detect who is a Skrull and who is not a Skrull.
Uh-huh.
We're now three episodes in and there is no hint that there is anyone working on a solution to that problem.
Okay.
Which is, and again, a reason why I feel that Fury not calling in favors is a disservice to him and a disservice to the story. Okay. Like, this is 35 years in, and I'm meant to believe that Nick Fury or S.H.I.E.L.D. or MI6 or whoever else, the U.S. government never thought of a way to determine if someone is a Skrull or not. In the first Secret Invasion, Mr. Fantastic...
You cut off their finger.
Yeah, there you go, right? Mr. Fantastic, along with, again, Abigail Brand, who actually saved him when he was captured by the Skrulls, he developed a device that could tell who was a Skrull and who was not a Skrull.
Okay.
And the 2023 comic, Maria Hill devised that if you heat up Skrull blood and human blood, the Skrull blood will revert back to its green state.
Okay.
So
okay.
There is a way in the comics for people to tell, and that hasn't happened in the show yet. So I'm wondering why. And I'm wondering if that will be remedied at some point.
Fair enough. We'll just have to wait and see, won't we?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's an important thing. I just don't get why they're not even talking about that.
Uh-huh.
Like there's not been a conversation about how do we figure out who is a Skrull.
Right. And Rhodey even says, in that conversation, you know, I was part of a presentation X number of years ago where we learned about this stuff.
Okay. So they've had 15 years to.
The paranoia of the U.S. government. We got to figure this out. And so where are the scientists doing this work?
Exactly.
Makes sense.
And so let's see if that gets remedied or not.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that's it for this week's episode. We've got three more to go. Let's fingers crossed they can land the plane.
Yeah.
And that we don't get crash into a dumpster that's already on fire.
Take the plane off.
So, all right. So just a quick thank you and shout out to our Patreon Loremaster supporters. Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H., Michael G., Michelle E., David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Peter OH, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Lavinia T., Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Eric F., Matthew M., Sarah M., DJ Miwa, Joyce E., and Andra B. Thank you all so very much. Thank you to all our Patreon supporters. We're sending you a cool thank you gift at the end of July to just appreciate you for all the support that you've given us, to, the ability to continue to improve and enlarge our podcasting repertoire. It's going to be a cool thank you gift. It's our old logo. It's got our little lion and rabbit icons, and we had some an elvish phrase translated and then digitally hand-drawn. So I just got the final approval from the print shop and they're sending me some samples. So I'm pretty excited. It's going to turn out really nice. For July, we have Woolshift Dust is developing on its own. Alicia, we talked about it a little bit at the end, but what are the key things that people should do or look for?
Yeah, so we have some bonus episodes coming in the main feed.
Okay.
And then the main feed will again be active later this summer when we begin our series about Dune and Dune the books and the adaptations. And
getting exciting there.
And for Silo fans, in the meantime, we're starting the Silo Book Club on Patreon, which is you can go to patreon.com/woolshiftdust and you'll see all the information there. We're going to be releasing episodes every 2 weeks, first covering the books and then rewatching the first season two episodes at a time, just going all in on the book spoilers with one of the experts of Silo world.
Question, are you for the Woolshift Dust book club stuff? Is that going to be, there's going to be no public feed. It's only going to be behind.
Right. Patreon. It's an exclusive feed. And asking the minimum Patreon fee per episode because we don't want to charge during months where we're not producing content in that feed. So it's just a pay per episode sort of thing.
Okay, cool. All right, great.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. In affiliate news, we have a new podcast under the Lorehound umbrella, and that's called Properly Howard. And that is Anthony, who you may know from Double Dragon and Electric Boogaloo. He and Steve have revamped their Cocoons of Horror podcast. That's a lot. Just know that we've got a stand-up comic and a theologian, and they talk about movies. And this season, they're talking about all kinds of remakes. So coming up next on their feed, and you can just search for Properly Howard or check us out on our website at lorehounds.com and they'll be listed there as well. They're going to be covered Howard the Duck, which is a really funny movie. It has got some good, if you're an MCU person, they talk about the MCU tie-ins with that. And then they're going to be doing White Men Can't Jump. And then we're going to be doing a Dune conversation as well, which Alicia, you and I will be on that to talk about the...
Repping the book readers, right?
Yes. And we'll be talking about the 2021 movie sort of in front of the part two coming out. And then they've got a whole slate of other things for the rest of the season. So check that podcast out. Otherwise, on the Lorehounds main feed, we're about to drop an episode on the Lorehounds one-shot on Asteroid City. Anthony and John and I are going to be talking about the latest Wes Anderson film. And then at the end of the month or the beginning of August, we're going to do a Barbenheimer episode. We're calling all Lorehounds members to assemble to see who's either seen the Barbie movie or the Oppenheimer movie or both. And I think Alicia said you're going to do both.
Double feature or bust.
Nice. And we're going to talk about the Barbenheimer phenomena of it all. We're starting, John and I are doing a full recap of Foundation. That starts, I believe, next on the 14th of July. And we're going to be dropping full recap episodes weekly on that. And we have an Ahsoka retrospective starting at the end of this month, which is going to get you prepped for the Ahsoka live series show. We still have Earthsea and Silmarillion stories. Those are coming up later this month. So we've got a packed July schedule. I counted up. I think we're doing something like 23 podcasts, and we have guest appearances on three. I don't know. It's craziness. So we keep the Lorehounds content train just keeps rolling along. And if you feel like you want to support us in all the work that we're doing, definitely check us out on the Patreon site, patreon.com/thelorehounds. All right, Jean, Alicia, thank you both again. And we've got three more to go, and our fingers are crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
See you next episode, Gaia and Maria.
Nice. Until then.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release three episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your six.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear three full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.